please, Sarah and Louise. Let's get a good welcome for them, and let's hear what they have to say.
Super. Thanks, everyone. I think we've got a bit of the graveyard shift after lunch. There we go. Can work it out. As mentioned, I'm from the National Treasury and our Financial Sector Policy Unit focused on sustainable finance. I've got a few slides. We'll go through them quite quickly because I think it'll be nice to have some questions from you all. And I think everyone's brought up ESG in one way or form already in some of the discussions I heard earlier. So we know that climate change is macro critical. The World Economic Forum's list of risks, and the most recent Reserve Bank Financial Stability Review. And Treasury, together with the South African Reserve Bank, has a financial stability mandate to protect the financial sector from major shocks, systemic risks, to build resilience into the economy. So starting, if we look at South Africa's sustainable finance journey, we can actually probably even go back to around 2010, 2011, when Treasury released the first discussion paper on the carbon tax. And there's been a lot of development since then through Regulation 28 by the Financial Services Conduct Authority, work by the Banking Association, the JAC, and others. Treasury released this sustainable finance paper just over 2 years ago, which really made recommendations for the whole of the financial sector on how to address particularly environmental risks. Following the paper, we set up a multi-stakeholder climate risk forum because we said primarily we need to focus on climate risks, and it was to co-create these market tools around disclosures, around taxonomies, around benchmark climate risk scenarios, and now that's obviously also expand to transition risks as well. I led the Treasury's taxonomy working group, and Louise, through the IFC, supported this work, and we had technical partners that helped us in developing the work that then went through this working group. We published the taxonomy in April 2020, so it's 3-4 months old, and now what we're really doing is raising market awareness of it and trying to embed it through pilots in the South African financial sector. It is still voluntary. It's very closely aligned to the EU taxonomy. The EU's is regulated, so a big clue, that's where we're going. The regulators will are looking at how their ESG paths will develop, and they will issue regulatory guidance probably later this year. So the objective of the Green Finance Taxonomy is the taxonomy itself is a catalogue to define what can be called as green in the South African market. So there's no black box, no proprietary information. Anyone can access it, and if you say, I've got a green asset that's aligned to the South African taxonomy, you can look it up. And everyone knows what that means. So you can identify economic activities that make significant environmental contributions, and it provides this common language to govern what is green. And it obviously needs to be updated and built upon. So what we've developed is really kind of the first version and the baseline of the taxonomy. It allows communication, particularly between pension funds and asset managers. I want green assets. What do you mean by green assets? I've got a green fund. What is a green fund? If you reference the taxonomy, everyone knows what that is. So it should prevent greenwashing, should promote ease of capital flow, specifically internationally, due to our alignment with the EU. It's really a tool to drive change. So the principles are that the screening criteria and the characteristics that you need to meet in each of the sectors or assets or projects that you apply the taxonomy to, those are basically emissions levels that reach or align to the pathways to reach net zero by 2050. Where there are no specific emission thresholds, then there's often best-in-class kind of use. It's technology agnostic, but it does have kind of thresholds that are based on industry best practices as well. It's a future economy reference, so we all kind of know the journey that we want to get to when we're investing in green assets. The EU estimate that 5% of assets in the EU will align to their green taxonomy. And yeah, that's really ambitious. And it's not to say tomorrow the assets are going to be green, but if you want to negate risks of stranded assets, if you want to increase your portfolio and your alignment, then you'll need to track over time green assets that are aligned to the taxonomy itself. As I said, we aligned to the EU back when we started this project in 2020, and it's still relevant today. The EU is the most internationally recognized. They did a five-year, very technical process. The taxonomy itself is very granular. More recently, they've made some amendments to possibly include nuclear and gas under very strict conditions in their taxonomy. We haven't included that in our version one. But needless to say, we're looking at international developments and international operability of our taxonomy. And what's important then is to domesticate these before they become kind of mandatory. So, you know, the EU's proposed a carbon border adjustment mechanism. Some asset managers and funds are already reporting according to the EU taxonomy. And what we are saying is we've domesticated it. So specifically in hard-to-abate sectors, we've given a 5 to 10 year time frame. So the financing can be recognized as green, even if the economic activity is not green at this point in time in the cement sector and the steel sector. Green buildings, we've introduced a tiered approach, an entry level, mid level and top tier. So we've made adjustments. So when funding comes in, we can say, this is the South African definition of green. Green buildings in the EU are not the same as green buildings in South Africa. We've got different modalities. We've got the Green Building Council. We've got South African forestry standards. So we've made reference to local standards and requirements. So in order to be taxonomy aligned, you have to meet essentially the principles of the taxonomy, and that's make significant contribution to one of the environmental objectives. There are six environmental objectives, which makes it a green taxonomy as opposed to just a climate change mitigation tool. So currently, we only have technical standards for mitigation and adaptation because net zero by 2050 and the pathways and the science-based targets have already been done to align to those. To develop technical standards for biodiversity, ecosystem restoration, and water use, yeah, we'd have to start from scratch. We wouldn't be able to use EU standards for that. So you have to make a significant contribution to one of these environmental objectives, and that's meeting those technical standards and the screening criteria. At the same time, you have to do no significant harm to any of the other environmental objectives. So this do no significant harm is a strong principle that's coming through internationally, that's been promoted through the G20 and others around this kind of double materiality principle. But an example of the do no significant harm is if you're doing renewable energy, you know, where are you doing a solar PV plant? What is it? How does it affect the ecosystem or the biodiversity in that area? What is the end of life management in terms of recycling and that kind of things. For hydropower, what is the impact on the water sources? Is it only a run-of-river hydropower? For wind turbines, obviously impact on bird life and things like that. So all, and then all these sectors, I mean, renewable and hydro is obvious. Transport, probably second most obvious, but then the rest is kind of, then how do you really classify what green assets are? And it's got the screening criteria for all of those and the do no significant harm principles as well. And then last, but certainly not least, is this compliance with minimum social safeguards. And what we're really trying to promote in the taxonomy is the transparency of social outcomes as well. So if you're comparing green assets, they'll meet the minimum social safeguards, which are really your labor laws as well as some OECD and UN guidelines. And then you should also be disclosing what impact you're having in terms of job creation, for example. It's not a requirement. If you don't create jobs, it doesn't mean you're not green. But ultimately, the taxonomy promotes transparencies and disclosures. So if you're comparing projects and they're not disclosing additional social outcomes, you can clearly ask why, or you can pick projects that have better social outcomes than others. So we've developed the technical standards, as I said, aligned to the EU just for the climate change mitigation and adaptation in a specific portion of the taxonomy itself. At the bottom is all those sectors, and at the top, the six environmental ones. So we've still got a lot of way to go in building it out. What we realized is developing the taxonomy took us 2 years. We thought it would be quicker, took us longer. Now that we've released it, we realize it's going to be hard. How do we embed it in the market? It's, as I said, it's voluntary. The regulators are looking at how it will form the basis of a sustainable finance ecosystem in South Africa, similar to how the EU has done it. The UK and the US are kind of also looking at their own, UK specifically, taxonomy developments. So we've got a version one, and now we've been piloting it in asset managers, in pension funds, in banks. How do you use it for green bond issuance, for example? How do you retrospectively see if your green bond issuance meets taxonomy alignment? If you have a portfolio in the unlisted debt or equity space, the data currently doesn't exist. The taxonomy gives you the catalog for what data you need to ask for. If the data is not there and you're calling it green, well, then you kind of need to ask, or if someone's saying they don't have the data but they're calling it green, then you need to kind of ask the questions why. We've gone the approach to say we're only looking at green assets. We're not looking at non-compatible or adverse environmental assets. Obviously, that's where the stranded asset risk comes from. We're not specifically using this tool for that purpose, but there is, yeah, I guess, two sides of the same coin. So the green taxonomy is not supposed to say if it's not green, you cannot invest in it, because obviously there's only a small portion in some sectors that will meet these criteria now, but they'll have to increase over time, and you should be able to track and set targets for those increases. There's a lot of also interest around a social taxonomy. How do we do affordable housing and things like that? That's very complex. The taxonomy might not be the correct tool, in my personal opinion, to do that. We do have other social indicator type of reporting requirements. But really, we want to see how the market uses the taxonomy before we develop it further. We want to see, give it time as a voluntary tool to develop capacity, to develop the data, to develop the methodologies, to promote the interoperability with the EU when we're talking about, you know, the deal announced at COP. How do we use the taxonomy as our definition for the green financing that we want? So, yeah, this is just how you align. You select, you align to those principles and then select the objectives, and you do a series of tests using in-house or third-party data. And then you disclose your alignment and the financial indicators. So the taxonomy can form the basis of any disclosure, TCFD type of disclosure, disclosure against your own internal climate targets. You could use it. An interesting case that's been asked, if you're setting a green tariff for an electricity provider in South Africa who has a green tariff, what does the green tariff mean? If they can say it's taxonomy aligned, then everyone knows that their hydropower, for example, has gone through all the technical screening criteria, that their nuclear is not included in a green tariff, and things like that. So there's, yeah, lots of different use cases and pilots. An interesting one by a municipality, you know, kind of grappling with how can they use it. Well, they said, well, now we're going out to tender for a waste project. Let's put the waste requirements from the taxonomy into the tender documents so we know that the waste project will meet the taxonomy. And when we go out for financing, we can say it's taxonomy aligned. So there are lots of ways in which it can be used. And it's essentially, we see it as a powerful market tool to drive capital towards green investments. Not to say it must go away from other investments, but specifically to drive towards green investments. So as I said, we've done a lot of pilots, 7 or 8 now. We did 6 last year on the draft version. FSCA and PA are looking at regulatory guidance in terms of supervisory statements. We don't have a timeline for when it will become mandatory. That's like the most common question. But we are on a path and we are on a journey and being, yeah, looking forward to what that might be. As I said, international operability, additional technical screening criteria, the water and biodiversity sectors. You know, we have a very biodiverse economy and we have a very water-scarce country as well. So we're looking specifically at how we might develop those in the future. We're looking at adaptation finance to develop more nuanced information on what are the benefits and metrics that adaptation finance should be tracking. And then transition finance. There's a lot of work going on by two presidential commissions. We're following that work. We're following the work of the International Labour Organization through the G20, work going on by the OECD and others on transition finance, and looking at this stage from a treasury perspective to develop kind of more transition finance principles. So I'm going to hand over now to Louise, who's going to give you, I guess, a bigger context. If you're not completely sold on the taxonomy yet, she'll kind of place it in context of what a lot of other emerging markets are doing as well.
Thanks. Okay, can you hear me all right? Okay, perfect. Good afternoon. Very nice to be here. So I represent the International Finance Corporation, part of the World Bank Group, and a particular program called the Sustainable Banking and Finance Network. So as I'm sure many of you in the room will know, the IFC's performance standards for environmental and social sustainability are one of the kind of global good practice technical standards for managing ESG in project finance and also more in broader asset categories now. And because of this role that the IFC was playing and that we were requiring this whenever we invested in financial intermediaries, in around 2007, 2008, we started being approached by financial sector regulators to help them domesticate those standards or at least create a level playing field at a national level. One of those regulators was the China Banking and Insurance Regulatory Commission. And the reason I mention them is that they were one of the first emerging markets, in fact, one of the first countries to issue a taxonomy. And I'll give you a bit of a background in terms of how you get to needing a taxonomy. So we have 62 countries and 72 institutions that participate in the Sustainable Banking and Finance Network. And the original intention when we established the network in 2012 was to focus on managing environmental and social risk in the financial sector. So the ESG Risk Management Foundation. But then very quickly, that becomes an opportunity. So green bonds, green loans, sustainability-linked finance becomes an opportunity. And in the last few years, climate change shot to the top of the agenda on both risk and opportunity side. So those are kind of the three buckets that we work in, the ESG foundation, the opportunity side, and then climate risk management and climate finance. So China built their environmental and social risk management foundation from 2007 through to 2015, they had a green credit policy. And then they wanted to stimulate green lending, and they had a requirement for green lending from the banks. But they needed a definition of green lending. So they had to come up with a list. So the first taxonomies were just a list of eligible sectors and activities, not necessarily the very detailed approach that Sarah has explained today. But what China then did, the People's Bank of China in 2015, used that catalog to issue their catalog for green bonds. And this was a massive shift. So in 2016, China was 30% of global green bond issuance. So they went from zero to hero in the period of 1 year. It was voluntary. It wasn't a mandatory taxonomy, but it created a shopping list of things that the banks could then issue green bonds on. That's what made it exciting. So now the other countries in the network have been working towards developing that kind of clarity for the market. So it gives you options. But then gradually we started to see that risk management foundation starting to creep in and be strengthened. Because if you're investing in renewable energy or other green assets and you don't do the risk management, then that's a risky asset. So what we see today through what the EU has done and what South Africa has done is we're seeing a convergence towards a very stable, robust approach to these are the eligible activities, these are the thresholds of performance that they need to meet, and this is how they contribute to an overarching goal. So I thought it would be useful for you just to see how South Africa is shaping up compared with other emerging markets. And so you're the first one seeing the results of this benchmarking. So we've compared recently seven national taxonomies that have come out. So you see China is included there, but Indonesia came out with their second taxonomy earlier this year. Mongolia has had one for a few years. Colombia issued theirs about a month or so after South Africa. And Bangladesh Bank has one. And they're actually the only ones that have a mandatory requirement for the banks to comply with the taxonomy so far. Okay. So the big headline here is it is a multipurpose tool. It's not just for one asset class. It serves multiple functions in the economy. Sarah talked about a sustainable finance ecosystem. And it doesn't have to be a mandatory tool in and of itself. It just simply has to be a consensus, which can then be embedded in other mandatory requirements. And it provides a common understanding. So when we did the pilots in South Africa, what came through is the pension funds are quite interested in this because it reduces a lot of the work that they have in assessing ESG compliance of the assets in their portfolios and to understand the products that are being offered by asset managers. So they already know that this increases comparability for them. And then things like the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, the new disclosure guidance, starts to bring in this question around if your assets are, or activities are aligned with a benchmark, explain how that is done in terms of being green or socially beneficial. There's a balance of interoperability. Sarah mentioned the fact that South African stakeholders in the financial sector wanted to align with the EU because that would increase the interoperability and attract EU finance. That's a good priority to have. It's also important to domesticate and represent national priorities. So just so you know, that discussion is still ongoing. There isn't a final solution yet. But there is generally, although we saw beginning some taxonomies starting with green lending or green bonds, we now see most taxonomies are addressing many uses in the market. And South Africa is unique in actually extending this to how companies are assessed. So South African companies could report on their alignment, which is great because sustainability-linked loans are taking off like wildfire. And so a company explaining their alignment then attracts financing from banks who are interested in that. And then that just gives you a sense of the types of topics that are starting to be filled in. Very few countries have social taxonomies. Georgia is about to issue a social taxonomy. I think Mongolia is exploring a social taxonomy. That's much more difficult to do, so it might be a while before we see it. But just transition, and is very, very popular. So we're probably going to see more of that soon. Okay, that's it. I'm going to stop there. So questions are welcome. I don't know how much time we have. I see there's one hand at the back. Sarah, come up. So is one hand, yeah.
Where's the hand? Oh, there we go.
Am I first? I'm worried about how we prioritize. In my world, social should be first, then environmental. So I saw even in the one slide, you spoke about minimum social safeguards. I'm quite uncomfortable with that prioritization. I don't know where it stems from. I wanted to ask that question earlier as well when one of the speakers was talking about the minerals and the mines and so on. And I'm saying, I mean, the concern should be, in terms of sustainability, if there's no mine activity in some of those communities, there's no sustainability for that community. So what sustainability is more important if the people don't have livelihoods? I don't see us prioritizing that part of the conversation, and that's a problem for me. It's one, and it really comes across as us just really being copycats in a way, copying the EU and so on. That's great, but that's a declining economic base, we should be asking what's more important for us as a country, as Africa, and so on. And that's not to say that sustainability should be ignored, but it's a question of priorities. If you look at that, social taxonomy, no priority. Green activities, lots of priority. That's a concern.
Can I ask my question first before you answer?
Yeah,
sure. So my question is along just transition. So I'm involved in an entity that is linked to the mining industry.
We have the ability to invest, but actually it's difficult to get that transition element, which I think then addresses the gentleman's concern, that if you have a bunch of miners sitting beside a big coal mine, how do you do something that's going to change them but actually keep their employment? I do believe Germany did well in that space, but for me that's an area I'd love to understand, because I think it is critical for South Africa, because we're never going to get the transition off carbon assets unless we can show a future for the people whose livelihoods depend on it. And there are no other choices for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer is it's not a different prioritization. I mean, social transformation is the bread and butter of what Treasury does. In terms of our financial stability mandate in protecting against greenwashing, the taxonomy is a very powerful market tool. I mean, we've got a financial sector transformation, financial inclusion, social safety nets, COVID grants. So we've got a lot of other instruments that we use to address social concerns, and that's why I made the comment that the taxonomy might not be the right tool to address those type of priorities. So it's not that this is prioritizing the environmental over the social or over the governance. I mean, South Africa is very well known internationally that our governance standards are high, despite mishaps that happen along the way with the King IV and whatnot. So it's definitely not that this is being prioritized. It's just saying that this is a market tool in the environmental space, specifically around climate change mitigation and adaptation, that's linked to science-based targets. And science-based targets are global. They're not specific. In terms of the just transition, that has a lot of complexities to it. It obviously is a risk, and we're looking, for example, with the Reserve Bank and the Prudential Authority around scenarios. There's a network for greening the financial system, but around scenarios around transition risk. We have a Presidential Climate Commission that I think elevates it from just an environmental affairs issue or just a minerals and energy ministerial or departmental issue and puts it under the presidency to develop those just transition pathways. And then specifically around that deal announced at COP for the USD $8.5 billion to come to South Africa. One of the key reasons there's not a lot of understanding of what it's going to fund is because we have the climate finance task team that is saying you can't just come and fund solar PV or something like that. You have to fund it all, and it has to be very concessional because a lot of the projects do not have a return. A lot of them are social projects that are specifically in the Mpumalanga area that should leave us better off than where we were before. So I think the skills development aspect of it is definitely and this thinking around the just transition projects cannot be individual projects. They have to be a suite of projects for an economic development. Our minister now likes to talk about an alternative economic development model. So that's the kind of thinking that's going around the just transition work specifically. I don't think we have the answers yet. One of the big things around domesticating the taxonomy is when financing does come, we're saying these are our standards. Don't come and impose yours in South Africa. We've developed an Excel mapping tool, so asset managers or whatnot can use it. That should come out September, October. That will kind of side by side show you the South African and the EU taxonomy and say, you know, where the differences are so that we can ensure that we're reporting against our own standards. Do you want to add?
Yeah, I can add. I love the prioritization of the social, and I think that's so. We, through the Sustainable Banking Finance Network, we only work with emerging markets, and the reason we do that is to make sure that the voice of emerging markets on how to deal with these issues comes through strongly, because the focus on green is a very European US type focus, you know, green buildings, renewable energy. And I think to a large extent EU assumes that a lot of the social safeguards are taken care of. So that's their mindset. So they're focusing on the green. If that gets translated to emerging markets context where the social is very important and the different emerging markets prioritize social in different ways, that social might get lost if it's just a copy and paste. And so what we're seeing is the need for emerging markets to actually step up and help define things like what is a just transition. So we've actually been called on. South Africa, Colombia, they share this priority of just transition. They're big mining-based countries. So we can actually define that. And so I would encourage South African voices to be vocal on that topic.
Any more questions?
Thanks. So the question is, it seems like the taxonomy is predominantly designed for financing and debt. But do you see that it will also play a role in in the investment or asset management space, where actually you'll take an instrument and have a classification of green or not. And maybe that is exactly what you see. I'm not aware if that is also part of this, or if that is, or if it is very specific to kind of projects.
Yeah.
And maybe just linked to that, the question for National Treasury is that the new Reg 28 came out with the infrastructure requirements, and you need to actually report on it. But I don't think there's a, and I know there's a definition, but the point is, what is a particular instrument? Does it have the label of infrastructure? And some are very clear, but others are not. And maybe a taxonomy of sorts might be required there, so that everyone can be consistent about this thing is infrastructure. Because I know there's been some talk about, you know, does MTN qualify as an infrastructure investment by virtue of the networks and that? But I don't think there are easy answers. I don't know. Maybe it's off the topic, but it is a thing that I think that we will have to grapple with as an asset management industry.
Yeah, CISA have very early on in the journey sent us their infrastructure taxonomy. So I know CISA have done an infrastructure taxonomy. I don't know if our pension funds division is looking at an infrastructure taxonomy. I think they have received that submission from CISA, but I can't really speak on their behalf. But it will be interesting to see how taxonomies get used in the market and the level of detail and granularity that is needed. As a voluntary market tool, if the regulators give guidance on how they're seeing it being used, a labeling of instruments, of financial instruments, was not top of the mind, but it definitely is a strong use case of the taxonomy. Using the taxonomy, for example, in Reg 28 could be quite easy because we have that guidance note that says ESG, and then you could say, well, when we say E, we mean green taxonomy aligned or any other specific benchmark. But this is kind of really going a bit broader, I guess, from a National Treasury policy perspective, although we don't like to call it policy because it hasn't gone through the whole cabinet process, so it's very just much a market tool. But it's... I lost my train of thought now. It can be used. If it can be used as a voluntary mechanism, then if the regulators give guidance on how it could be used for disclosures or for labeling or for others, it's meant to be a whole financial sector approach, and part of it making it voluntary is also understanding what the market needs it most for and where it addresses risks as well as opportunities and prevents greenwashing.
Yeah, and I think the idea in the EU is that it would apply to all types of activities in the private sector. So we're even seeing it trickle down into things like private equity, where particularly in the impact investing space, where you've got businesses that have designed their products or services or operations to contribute to those six or one of those six environmental objectives. But if they claim that, they can no longer claim it without demonstrating that it actually meets the definitions in an existing benchmark. I think the only limitation we have right now in that regard is that not all activities that could be described as green are currently covered in taxonomies. There's a bit of expansion that has to happen. But while that expansion is happening, the principles that are in the taxonomy are incredibly powerful. So contributing significant contribution to an environmental objective that has been defined by a country from a policy perspective, that is very powerful. The social safeguards, the do no significant harm, and then maybe, and use of science-based metrics and justification for why this is considered green. So I think those practices are going to come in, and a lot of the due diligence that's already done on things like project finance or for other assets, using the IFC performance standards or the OECD guidelines, that addresses this convergence towards a principles-based approach.
And I mean, maybe just a last point is we also see the taxonomy as being somewhat complementary to the carbon tax. The carbon tax penalizes emissions, and then the taxonomy is your catalog to say, well, if you're going green, these are the criteria and the projects that you can invest in to improve the greenness of your company or project or portfolio, as an example. And by doing that, you can attract green finance.
All right. I think that goes about and summarizes it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.